This is Black Millennial Money.
This is Black Millennial Money, where we talk about how you can make more money, keep more money, invest your money and spend your money on the finer things in life, all from a Black Millennial perspective. I'm your host, Joseph Oysu, and today I am your special guest. Episode 100, the final episode of Black Millennial Money. Thank you so much for tuning in. It's been an incredible journey. And in today's episode, I'm going to be breaking down why I started a podcast. And in case you missed it in the other 99 episodes, the one thing you need to take away from all the work I've done over the past 2 years to bring you this podcast, to bring you this content, to bring you this information. But before we get into all of that, regular listeners, you know what I'm about to say. If you haven't liked, subscribed, and shared with everybody in your phone book, what are you waiting for? We're on a mission to reach 100 million people around the world with life-changing financial information, and you can be part of that. If you'd like to increase your contribution to the platform that little bit further, like these lovely people on screen, click the link in the description and join our Patreon. If you have any dilemmas or questions that you want to be sending through, send them over to us. We will be answering them and releasing them on the channel. You can contact us at blackmillennialmoney.com or head over to Instagram and send them to me on BMM Global. Lastly, my book, The Three Circles of Wealth, How the Children of Immigrants and Working Class Parents Can Get Rich and Stay That Way, is coming out. Click the link in the description to join the waiting list. You don't want to miss it. You'll get a discount when it comes out and you'll be the first people to hear about it. Today's episode, why I started a podcast. For additional context, I am a big fan of history. I study people, I study trends. And when I look at history, I knew that there was a special moment that we were in as a Black community, which is why I made this podcast, Black Millennial Money, rather than just Millennial Money. I wanted to talk to a very specific audience and a very specific experience. And we have a window of opportunity as Black Millennials to literally transform the future of the Black community globally. And I wanted to do my part to make that a reality. To do that, in this episode, I need to explain to you the three generations principle, which I learned from all the conversations with all the wealth managers I've had on the show. What is the three generations principle? It's the idea that the first generation builds wealth, the second generation grows wealth, and the last generation basically wastes it all, right? The first generation, they usually come from nothing. They hustle their way, work really, really hard to build something. They're tough people, hardworking people. The second generation sees this, understands the work and pain it took to get there, and their parents invested in them to get a better education. So they often grow whatever the business is or do better financially than their predecessors, whether that's through professional careers or through starting their own businesses or growing the family business, right? The final generation, the third generation, they grew up rich. So unlike the second generation, they didn't grow up with any of the struggle that the first generation had to live through. The first generation came from nothing. The third generation, mom and dad had money. Grandma and grandpa had money. So we've always just had money. They grew up and it was always ice cream in the tub. It was never stew. It was never a goosey. It was just never something else. Whenever they opened the box of Quality Street, it was Quality Street in the box. And the third generation doesn't see the value in all of the principles that the first generation lives by, and that the second generation really took to another level and has allowed it to guide their lives, but have allowed them to grow even further than where the first generation went. So that's the three generation principle. Why is that important? Because I believe that the Black community is in its third generation in the modern economy. Now, for context, what I mean by the modern economy is since the year 1900. Prior to that, Black people were largely excluded or used as the batteries of the modern economy. So whether that was segregation of some sort, slavery, some other form of subjugation, for the 400 years leading up to 1900, we weren't even a factor. Everyone else was making money off our blood, sweat, and tears, no matter where you were in the world. So we are in our third generation, if my math is correct. And I'm going to break down what that means. So in our first generation, who are the people in the first generation? So these are people who were born between 1900 and 1940. They would have become adults and started impacting the world in the year 1920 to 1960. Big examples of people like this are your grandparents and great-grandparents, Martin Luther King, the Malcolm X's of the world, Patrice Lumumba, the Nelson Mandelas of the world. Those significant figures from that era. And their fight was to prove the humanity of Black people. Some of you may already know this, but if you go back to the year 1900, up until roughly 1920, so after this First World War, there were black people in zoos across Europe and in North America as exhibits, being fed through cages, having their teeth filed to make them look more animalistic, and being performing for white people as the savages of Africa. That's where we were. We weren't even considered human. Many a psychologist and scientist and theorist had all their ideas about why black people were not even second-class citizens. They were third or fourth-class citizens in places like Australia. The Aboriginals there, who, by some people's measure, are considered black people, were considered flora and fauna. They were just nature. No different from rabbits in trees. Right? This generation had to fight for our freedom, and they had some tough odds against them. If they were in America or Africa, they were in a form of pseudo-slavery, right? So slavery had been abolished, but what had happened was, in America, most of those people that left the plantations was not going to be employed by anyone else. So they ended up working in those places for next to no money. So the same places that you've been traumatized for generations is now your primary employer, paying you barely any money. In Africa, where there was quote-unquote no slavery, you had quota workers, where the likes of King Leopold and other Western colonialists forced people into indentured servitude. So you had to meet quotas on rubber, on cola nuts, on rice production, on all sorts of different types of production to fund the industrial revolution that the West was experiencing, where all this technology and newfangled innovations were coming from, off the backs of the black people in Africa, the Caribbean, and in North America. Even in Brazil, this generation's parents would have been slaves, because slavery in Brazil was only abolished in 1888, 12 years before some of these people would have been born. So their parents would have 100% been slaves. My grandfather was born in 1904. Had he been born in Brazil, his parents would have definitively have been slaves. Context, right? But these people overcame so many odds, and they had some incredible accomplishments. They kicked down the door for us to be able to access opportunity. So in the US, they ended Jim Crow laws. Their protest, their hard work, their resilience ended Jim Crow laws. They fought for independence from the Caribbean to Africa. So what are these new countries for self-determination? The right to govern yourself and determine the outputs of your land and country was what they fought for. And they eventually, although it was many decades later, saw the end of apartheid in South Africa. It was that generation that fought for those freedoms. They also pushed that second generation towards education, because they were denied the right to learn, and they knew the value of unlocking that piece to understand the world, to gain the knowledge required to succeed, would be the key to the next stage of progress for black people worldwide. At this point, I want to introduce to you the idea of the success mix. And I'm going to mispronounce that the whole way. I've been trying to say success mix, and it just gets worse every single time. So success mix, I'm going to put it on screen so you know the words I'm trying to say here. And there's three elements of the success mix. The first element being access to opportunity. That means I can see an opportunity. I can take advantage of an opportunity. The second is knowledge, and that means understanding how best to capitalize on the opportunity, having the knowledge of how to do a thing. The third piece is timing. So now that I can access the opportunity, now I know how to leverage the opportunity, is the rest of the world, is the environment I find myself in, right for this innovation, right for this invention, right for me to succeed in this moment? And that's what the success mix is. The first generation broke down the doors of access for us. Access, where we went from being considered flora and fauna to barely human to actual human beings who can participate in the modern economy for the first time in a meaningful way. The fight wasn't over, and there was more for the second generation to do. Now, the second generation was born from roughly 1920 to 1960, and they would have become adults since they had impact in the world from 1940 to 1980. And their fight was for survival and for the acquisition of knowledge. Just because we were considered human, just because we were protected by anti-racist laws globally, and because we had our independence in countries around the world, in our own countries, didn't mean that we were free. So, this is where you start to see things where the newly formed governments in former colonial countries start to collapse. you start to see the cracks forming. Those former colonial powers still want to keep their the benefits that they were gaining from these countries. So they're destabilizing governments. They're assassinating democratically elected presidents. They're funding wars as long as they can continue to get what they need out of it. In North America, you find people moving from the South further north in search of different opportunities. When they get there, they're met with some of the same hostility that they're walking away from. In Brazil, you start to see people, and for context, the reason I keep talking about Brazil is they have the largest population of black people outside of Africa or anywhere in the world. So, in Brazil, those people that were stuck on farms as rural laborers and indentured servants start moving to the city in search of different opportunities. And again, met with hostility. So, they start to migrate to different countries. So from the Caribbean, people migrate north into North America, so America and Canada. They also go east into the UK. From Africa, predominantly the west coast of Africa, you start seeing people going into France, into Belgium, into the UK, into Ireland. Why? In search of different opportunities, because the countries that they're in aren't the stable places that they believed them to be at the time. And who's in this generation? Who's in this generation? My parents? Are definitely in this generation. Your grandparents may be in this generation, depending on how old your grandparents and parents are. It could be your great grandparents in some regard. And when they got to these countries and started to migrate around the world in order to survive, what they found was hostility. Examples of that are racist gangs in the UK, the likes of the Northern Front, or skinhead gangs who terrorize black people in the UK. People putting signs in their window saying no blacks, no dogs, no Irish. The only thing that's changed in 50 odd years is Irish and dogs are allowed in. Black people in a lot of places, they still look at you funny. In North America, you had structural racism put in place, structural barriers where, you have the right to get a job now, but are you ever going to get promoted? Maybe not. You want to get a mortgage? Okay. We're going to charge you 4 times the interest rate that someone who's white that earns half as much money as you would get. If at all, we can let you buy in this area because there's covenants on property now where this is written on the contracts and the deeds of ownership on this home that it can never be sold to black people. These are the structures that you find in the Caribbean and throughout Africa. These newly independent nations, the likes of the World Bank and IMF, start putting the shackles of debt on these countries. We'll give you a loan. But you just have to not invest in education. You have to not farm your own crops. You have to buy all your food. You have to import all of your food from overseas. None of your people can get an education. You can't invest in infrastructure because you owe us money. This is the landscape that this generation found themselves in. Their neighborhoods flooded with vices, weapons. It's funny how you can't get a council to... You can't get your local authority to fix a pothole, but if you wanted to buy a kilo of cocaine, it's just available somehow, right? It's funny how in all the areas in London, for example, that are being gentrified, that black people were forced into when they first came to this country because nowhere else could they get accommodation. What you would find are things that we know to be bad for communities, bad for society. So you find junk food everywhere, chicken shops. Fried food everywhere. Low quality food everywhere. You find betting shops, gambling shops where you can lose all of your money in a heartbeat. And then once you've eaten horrible food, you've wasted all your money in the bookies, you can now walk across the road and buy yourself some alcohol to numb your pain. Then go back home to your family and take it out all on them. When we look at these communities, you start to see the seeds of dysfunction. You start to see the seeds of crime. You start to see over-policing and heavy-handed approaches to dealing with societal issues, not criminal issues, social challenges. But this generation fought back. Rather than letting this be their narrative, they worked incredibly hard to become the first generation of black millionaires and billionaires at scale in a modern economy. Emphasis on a modern economy. For the past 400 years, these are the richest group of black people on the face of the earth at scale. There were always millionaires, there were always billionaires. But where there was a lot of them, this was the first generation. They pushed for education. You had a generation of doctors, lawyers, professionals at scale. business owners at scale. This was that generation. They became community leaders, icons and innovators. The likes of Dr. Gladys West, who was one of the people that invented GPS, made it possible for you to watch your Uber Eats arrive on your app, made it possible for you to leave your house and have no idea where you're going and put in a destination on the sat nav and get there on time. That's what she built. You also have the likes of Philip Emeagwali, who's a Nigerian immigrant who lived in the US. He was one of the mathematicians that solved a fundamental equation that makes the internet possible. All of the possibilities that the internet has powered, remote working, this podcast, on all the things we enjoy today, he answered one of the foundational questions that made it possible. And that doesn't even take into account the achievements of our parents, our grandparents, our uncles, our aunts, who now, against the odds, are millionaires on paper, many of whom bought their homes in what was considered a working class or underprivileged area. But now that the gentrification is kicking in, auntie and uncle are right there sitting on £800,000 worth of three bedroom house. Congratulations, paid off, cash. Cash. Grandma's house is enough to buy four more. Congratulations, you came here and exceeded expectation. You did what you came here to do. You survived, you acquired knowledge, and you unlocked the second piece of the success mix. You got the knowledge required to take advantage of the opportunities. They did so much and continue to do so much for us. They continue to do so much for us. Some big names in this generation that I miss. The likes of Robert F. Smith, a billionaire hedge fund owner in the US. Oprah Winfrey, another billionaire out of the US. Diane Abbott, a very visible black politician in the UK who deserves more credit than she currently gets. And the likes of Strive Masiwa, who out of South Africa runs a massive telecoms company. These are the people who sold the foundations for us, in addition to our grandparents and parents. Now, those are the first two generations. Powerful, resilient, and successful black people who crawled and walked so the third generation could run. The question now is, who is the third generation and what is their fight?
You may not know this, but we have a Patreon page. Patreon is a platform that makes it super easy for people to support creators. Here at Black Millennial Money, our mission is to reach millions of people around the world with life-changing financial information, and you can be part of that. Head over to patreon.com/blackmillennialmoney or click the link in the description to sign up and start supporting us today.
And we are back on this episode of Black Millennial Money, where we are talking about the message for black millennials, the reason I started this podcast. And we've broken down the first and second generation of black people in a modern economy. And we're about to start talking about the third generation. Who is the third generation? The third generation are people born between 1960 and the year 2000. They would have come of age between 1980 and 2020. So reaching adulthood, starting to impact the world. So if you are at least 18 years old in 2020, this is for you. This is what we're talking about. This is the generation of me, of you. Other people in this generation are the likes of Jay-Z, the Renault Edologis of the world, Ava DuVernay, Vusi Tembekwaya out of South Africa, Zeke Aziz out of Latin America, Edward Enemfor in the UK, and Juana Matias out of the US, and a whole host of other people who populate your Instagram feed, who are the entertainers, the thought leaders, the business owners, the many of the people you see on Black Millennial Money over the past 2 years are those same people, that third generation. So the first generation had to fight for access. They had to prove we were human. The second generation had to fight for knowledge and survive the onslaught that was coming for them. And now here we are in the third generation. And I believe in our generation, we have all three elements of the success mix. So we should be fighting for ownership. We should recognize the moment in time we're in and make sure we secure ownership in perpetuity. Not ownership for sale, but ownership forever. But we've got two fundamental problems with the third generation. And these are indicative of being the third generation. It's not about us being bad people. It's that life is just so good. The first is distance from the ideals of the first generation. The first generation came with a culture. They came with an ambition. They came with a mindset. And not everything that they did was right. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that my grandparents were the most woke people available. My parents aren't the woke people available. They're not. And probably the same for you. But that ethic that they had, that vision of what the future could look like for them and their children, we don't see it the same way. Because in our generation, many of us aren't willing to make personal sacrifices. The world is a far better place than it once was. But we forget that it is because previous generations of black people fought and continue to fight for it to stay that way. We are just here reaping the benefits. And if you don't believe me, many of you who work in corporate offices like me don't even see it sometimes. I walk into the shiny building that I work in, greet the only black people I'm going to see for the rest of the day in security. These people are old enough to be my parents. Old enough to be my parents, standing on their feet all day, making money per hour while I make money per year. I go up in the shiny box into the sky and I look around me and there's barely any black people over the age of 45 in any of these corporate offices. And it's not because the talent doesn't exist. It's not because those people don't exist. It's because they were boxed out. And now they're fighting to keep the literal doors open downstairs for us. Because the bills they're paying are bills we don't have to. They're still supporting some of their children. They're still paying for weddings. They're still doing childcare for their children. They're still putting their children through school. They did that. So we have an opportunity to continue this great work. But there's such a big divide between the realities we live in and the realities that they live in. Try explaining to your parents that you're going to spend X amount of thousand on going to Dubai to... In fact, forget going to Dubai. That you're spending X amount of hundreds of pounds for someone to tape a sparkler to a bottle of champagne you could buy for £40 in Tesco. You're about to pay £400 for someone to put a firework on your champagne and walk it over to you. And then take the firework. £400 a bottle for a £40 bottle. But to you, it makes perfect sense. To that generation, they don't even want a £40 champagne. They're going to go and buy some non-alcoholic joint for £4, right? I know some of our parents are still here arguing over they still think that the price of a bag of oranges should be the same from 20 years ago. That's the world they live in. Whereas to you, it's an inconsequential amount of money. Because you make money by the year, they make money by the hour. Or at least they spent a good chunk of their adulthood doing so. We need to decide as a generation what we're fighting for. What's important to us? And as I said before, I think we should be fighting for ownership. The second thing that our generation struggles with is the absence of an obvious enemy. The first two generations had it easier. It was very, very clear to every single black person who their enemy was. For the most part, it was a white person, easy to call out, or one of their agents, equally easy to call out. So this person could have been Asian, they could have been white, they could have been mixed heritage, they could have even been black. But you knew who they represented, you knew what they were doing to you in that moment in time, and they were doing it to everybody. The challenge that we have now is that so many of us are living well that we don't realize that so many of us are not living well. And I talk about this from a place of privilege, knowing that I work in a shiny box in the sky and get paid by the year. There are many of my peers who got stuck in a system, whether that was prison or poor educational performance or something that means that their life is significantly different from mine. The daily experience with the likes of the police is very different from mine. I've never had an interaction with the police that wasn't my fault. I've never been stopped and searched. I've never had a negative interaction with the police. But there are my peers who that's the only reality they've known. And because it's not so painfully obvious like it once was, and don't get it twisted, I'm not saying racism's over, I'm not saying discrimination of any kind is over. It just rebranded, right? So you apply for a job, you're doing really well, but you don't make it through your probation because they say you're not a culture fit, although all of your work is done perfectly. Other ways is described as being far too urban, right? The microaggressions we experience on a daily basis about what our hair looks like, what our food smells like, our complexion, or someone comes back from holiday and heavens above, they've caught a little bit of sun. They're like, ooh, me and you're the same color now. Happens a lot. Happens every day. But it's not the same. It's not the same as what our parents went through. I've never been chased by a gang of white youths. In fact, growing up, white youths were afraid of me because of the area I lived in. Not because I was someone to be feared. Look at me. I'm definitely not someone to be feared. But I never had those interactions, right? I haven't lived that life because the enemy isn't... Is there even an enemy? Or is the enemy more within us today? Yes, there are people who would like to see us fail. But how many people in our community truly want to see us succeed? Or are we too preoccupied enjoying life? And because of that, it is very hard to galvanize this generation of black people to do stuff for the community at large. Now, this is why what you do next matters. Firstly, because the community needs us to. If we want to maintain the standard of living we have and improve that for future generations, we need to focus on it and deliver on it at scale. The second thing is, those previous generations, grandma, mom, dad, uncle, granddad, they're coming to the time where they're passing away. And they, like I said, as a generation, they are going to hand over billions to us globally. Billions. And the problem with us right at the moment is that we only seem to care about going to Dubai to do lifestyle and rent out Lamborghinis, buying German cars and popping bottles. Holidays, enjoyment, flexing. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'll come from front. I'm planning 2 holidays and a honeymoon in the next 12 months. I'm going on holiday, right? I drive a German car. It's not the one you're thinking. It's a VW Golf, but it's a German joint. I could have gone something cheaper, right? And just last week, I popped at least 2 bottles worth of vodka. So there were no sparklers, but yes, they would have been cheaper in the supermarket. I'm not saying we should not do those things. I'm not willing to give up those things, if I'm being honest. I work very hard for my money. I want to enjoy it. And I believe that we should all be enjoying our money. The fourth point I make in the opening of this podcast is about spending money on the finer things in life. And if that's a bottle of champagne with a sparkler attached to it, do your thing. But my concern is that we have the best opportunity for 400 years, to transform the future of the black community globally. One, because we're about to get an inheritance from our incredibly hardworking ancestors who are still with us today. Thank God we still have a little bit of time to get our act together. But because the world is different now. We have a lot more opportunity. We have the entire success mix. We have the access. We have the knowledge. And we have the time. And the time in 2 ways. Firstly, the technology is just there for us to capitalize an opportunity. And most of us are young as we're doing it. Our parents went to university in their 30s and 40s. And by the time they came out, they were told, oh, you're overqualified. Right? We come out of university in our early 20s, 21, 22, 24 even. And we have time to make mistakes. And many of us end up making more money than our parents by our late 20s. So by the time we get into our prime earning years, our 30s, we're way past whatever our parents would have earned at any stage of their career. So we have the access. We have the knowledge much younger. We have the time to make mistakes, but also the time we live in is the freest scenario for black people for 400 years. 400 years. One of the things powering this opportunity for us today is the internet. It is an open door of unrestricted wealth accumulation if you so choose it. All the information you ever need to build a strong financial foundation exists on the internet. And the way to acquire more funds is through the internet. We've had some incredible examples on this show, breaking it down how they've done it. So we go back to Amma from Plant Made, who was on this show talking about how she did £100,000 in 5 months from a product she was making at home, in her home. She was mixing this hair product that is changing the lives of tens of thousands of customers around the world. Just this year, she was on a BBC program talking about how she's made several million since she started. And counting. Online. An opportunity our parents could never have dreamt of. But access, knowledge, and timing were perfect for her. Lotano, who's been on the show, employs 5 people. He's 24 years old. He has 5 employees and owns a company valued at several million. Emmanuel Sukwo, I met him when he was a wealth manager, speaking to groups of 50 and 100 people at a time, helping people, trying to teach our community about finance, wanting to be the black financial advisor, the financial advisor who served the black community and saw us transform our lives and improve our outcomes for generations. Today, off the back of the work he's done and off the power of the internet, he's all over our TV screens, Channel 4 with his own shows, the BBC, ITV News, he's there. Aisha Ofori, who was on the show, over £10 million in property, started a career at Goldman Sachs, learned about property from the internet, over £10 million in property as it stands, and counting, she's in her 30s. Temi Alchemy, from the 90s Baby Show, runs a podcast that over 70,000 people listen to and watch every month. Live shows up and down the country. All the ad sponsors you could imagine. For the 3 of them, building a lifestyle on the internet, transforming their lives while having full-time jobs, buying homes, starting families, getting married, powered by the opportunities that they saw online. Shay Loco. She works in recruitment. She makes a full-time income helping others get jobs outside of a full-time job. These are people that you've heard from on this show, taking advantage of the opportunity we have today to build generational wealth. I'm not asking you to be exactly like them. I'm asking you to see the opportunity and find your way to take advantage of it. I know that we can do it. I know that we have everything it takes to build the infrastructure, to gain the wealth that we need to transform our communities, to honor the work of the generations that came before us, to continue that great legacy of achievement against the odds. Our parents' and grandparents' efforts were not in vain. They have blessed us and will continue to bless us collectively with billions, billions of assets. What are we going to do about it? For the first time, the UK black middle class at scale is being born. We are it. We are buying homes. Is there a black person you know in from 25 to 35 years old right now who isn't thinking, how am I going to acquire a home, and has the means to do so? The black middle class is being born. Every day you scroll down your feed, someone's holding some keys. Every day, someone's getting a six-figure job. Every day, someone's getting a brand endorsement or some sort of deal, a book deal coming out. The black middle class is here. It is us. And what are we going to do about it? A little known stat is being born middle class in a middle class home is the biggest indicator of whether or not you're going to be a millionaire or billionaire in this life. Our children are going to be the people that are titans of industry in this country if we decide to do so. If we decide to do our piece, to do the work required. And I've seen we've got the potential. The number of MBEs being thrown around. Six figure this, six figure that. Number of businesses that people are starting. Number of professionals you now have. The seeds are here. I saw it in the estate in Tottenham where I grew up. Where people who were boxed in by opportunities that they thought were available to them turned 20-pound bags of weed into a 70,000-pound BMW in less than 12 months. Talk about return on investment. Now, it's not the right way to do it. I'm not glorifying that path. But what I'm saying to you is that well of potential, the work ethic, the focus, the business acumen that allows someone to be able to do something like that. If that person inherits grandma's house, 700k, 300k, 100,000 pounds after grandma passes away or their parents pass away even, paid off house, lump sum of cash. If that person has six figures and a plan, Jeff Bezos who? Warren Buffett who? That person is going places. That person is a vision of what the black community could be. Because we've seen people, we've essentially seen our previous generation turn water into wine. Now that we're getting older and we're realizing the cost of things, how was mum funding four kids, paying these bills, making £800 a month? How? That's magic. We have the same opportunity. Difference is we have a lot more resource. We have a lot more opportunity. We have a lot more time. We have a lot more youth on our side. What are we going to turn water into wine into from our generation? I keep saying it. It's ownership. Our generation needs to fight for ownership and never let that go. Let's pop bottles that we own. Let's catch flights on airlines that we own. Let's buy luxury cars from companies that we own. And yes, we should always buy black, but that's not what I'm talking about. I mean, we should own it all. We should have it all. I want to buy Manchester United one day. We can't get a black manager in the Premier League to last longer than a season. We're going to have a black owner. Tell me I can't own it. What happens if we own the likes of LVMH? If you're not familiar with LVMH, they own Louis Vuitton, Moët, Hennessy, and many other luxury brands. They own them. Why can't we own 10% of Apple and tell them to start mashing up the iPhone? Why can't we own the next vaccine and medicine company that's going to transform humanity? Why can't we do that? I'll tell you one thing for free. We can, we should, and we must. The motto of this podcast has always been how you can make more money, keep more money, invest your money, and spend your money on the finer things in life, all from a black millennial perspective. My final words for you today, and my final words on this podcast, is that you should make all the money that you can, keep all the money that you can, invest all the money that you can, and spend everything else like it's going to expire. But we must focus on ownership. We must own a piece of this world that we keep forever. That allows us to make choices, make decisions, influence people in power, be the people in power. 100 episodes of this podcast, 100 episodes of Gems. This episode is the reason why I did it. Go and be great. This isn't the last time you're going to hear from me, but it's the end of Black Millennial Money.
This is Black Millennial Money.